The book is Star Tide Rising by David Brin, Chapter 5, Tom Orley. A tall, dark-haired man swung one-handed from the leg of a bed that was bolted to the floor in an upside-down room. The floor slanted over his head. His left foot rested precariously on the bottom of a drawer pulled from one of the inverted wall cabinets. At the sudden yellow flash of the alert light, Tom Orley whirled and grabbed at his holster with his free hand. His needler was half-drawn before he recognized the source of the disturbance. He cursed slowly and reholstered the weapon. Now what was the emergency? He could think of a dozen possibilities offhand, and here he was, hanging by one arm in the most awkward part of the ship. "I initiate contact, Thomas Orley." The voice seemed to come from above his right ear. Tom changed his grip on the bed leg to turn around. An abstract, three-dimensional pattern swirled a meter away from his face, like multicolored motes caught in a dust devil. "I suppose you would like to know of the cause of the alarm. Is this correct?"
"You're damned right I do," he snapped. "Are we under attack?"
"No." The colored images shifted. "This ship is not yet assailed, but Vice Captain Takata Jim has announced an alert. At least 5 intruder fleets are now in the neighborhood of Kithrup. These squadrons appear now to be in combat not far from the planet." Orley sighed. So much for quick repairs and a getaway. He hadn't thought it likely that their hunters would let them escape again. The damaged streaker had left a noisy trail behind her when she slipped away from the confusion of the ambush at Morgran. Tom had been helping the crew in the engine room repair Streaker's stasis generator. They had just finished the part calling for detailed hand-eye work, and the moment had come to steal away to the deserted section of the dry wheel where the NIS computer had been hidden. The dry wheel was a band of workrooms and cabins that spun freely when the ship was in space, providing pseudo-gravity for the humans aboard. Now it was still. This section of upside-down corridors and cabins was abandoned in the inconvenient gravity of the planet. The privacy suited Tom, though the topsy-turvy arrangement was irksome. "You weren't to announce yourself unless I switched you on manually," he said. "You were to wait for my thumbprint and voice ID before letting on you were anything but a standard comm." The swirling patterns took on a cubist style. The machine's voice sounded unperturbed. "Under the circumstances, I took the liberty. If I erred, I am prepared to accept discipline up to level 3. Punishment of a higher order will be considered unjustified and be rejected with prejudice." Tom allowed himself an ironic smile. The machine would run him in circles if he let it, and he would gain nothing by asserting his titular mastery over it. The Timbrimi spy who had lent the NIS to him had made it clear that the machine's usefulness was partly based upon its flexibility and initiative, however irritating it became. "I'll take the level of your error under advisement," he told the NIS. "Now, what can you tell me about the present situation?"
"A vague question. I can access the ship's battle computers for you, but that might entail an element of risk."
"No, you'd better not do that quite yet."
If the NIS tried to inveigle the battle computer during an alert, Kredaki's bridge crew might notice. Tom assumed Kredaki knew about the presence of the NIS aboard his ship, just as the captain knew that Gillian Baskin had her own secret project. But the Dolphin commander kept quiet about it, leaving the two of them to their work. "All right, then. Can you patch me through to Gillian?" The holo danced with blue specks. "She is alone in her office. I am placing the call." The motes suddenly faded. They were replaced by the image of a blonde woman in her early 30s. She looked puzzled briefly,
Then her face brightened with a brilliant smile. She laughed. "Aha! You're visiting your mechanical friend, I see. Tell me, Tom, what does a sarcastic alien machine have that I don't have? You've never gone head over heels so literally for me." Very funny. Still, her attitude relieved his anxiety over the alert. He'd been afraid that they would be in combat almost immediately. In a week or so, Streaker might be able to make a good accounting of herself before being destroyed or captured. Right now, she had all the punch of a drugged rabbit. "I take it the Galactics aren't landing yet." Jillian shook her head. "No, though Makani and I are standing by in the infirmary, just in case. Bridge crew says at least 3 fleets have popped into space nearby. They immediately started having it out, just like at Morgran. We can only hope they'll annihilate each other." "Not much hope of that, I'm afraid." "Well, you're the tactician of the family. Still, it might be weeks before there is a victor to come down after us. There will be deals and last-minute alliances. We'll have time to think of something." Tom wished he could share her optimism. As the family tactician, it was his job to think of something. "Well, if the situation's not urgent..." "I don't think it is. You can spend a little while longer with your roomie there, my electronic rival. I'll get even by getting intimate with Herbie." Tom could only shake his head and let her have her joke. Herbie was a cadaver, their one tangible prize from the derelict fleet. Jillian had determined that the alien corpse was over 2 billion years old. The ship's mini-library seemed to have seizures every time they asked what race it had once belonged to. "All right, then. Tell Kraydeke I'll be right down, okay?" "Sure, Tom. They're waking him now. I'll tell him I last saw you hanging around somewhere." She gave him a wink and switched off. Tom watched the place where her image had been and once again wondered what he had done to deserve a woman like her. "Out of curiosity, Thomas Orley, I am interested in some of the undertones of this last conversation. Am I right in assuming that some of these mild insults Dr. Baskin conveyed fell into the category of affectionate teasing? My Timbrimi builders are telepathic, of course, but they also seem to indulge in this pastime. Is it part of a mating process, or is it a friendship test of some sort?" "A little of both, I guess. Do the Timbrimi really do the same sort of..." Tom shook himself. "Never mind about that. My arms are getting tired, and I've got to get below quickly. Have you anything else to report?" "Not of major significance to your survival or mission." "I take it, then, that you haven't managed to coax the ship's mini-library to deliver anything on Herbie or the derelict fleet?" The holo flowed into sharp geometries. "That is the main problem, isn't it? Dr. Baskin asked me the same question when she last checked in on me 13 hours ago." "And did you give her any more direct an answer than you're giving me?" "Finding ways to bypass the access programming on this ship's mini-library is the reason I was put aboard in the first place. I would tell you if I had succeeded." The machine's disembodied voice was dry enough to desiccate melons. "The Timbrimi have long suspected that the Library Institute is less than neutral, that the branch libraries sold by them are programmed to be deficient in very subtle ways to put troublesome races at a disadvantage. The Timbrimi have been working on this problem since days when your ancestors wore animal skins, Thomas Orley. It was never expected we would achieve anything more on this trip than a gathering of a few shards of new data and perhaps elimination of a few minor barriers." Orley understood how the long-lived machine could take such a patient perspective. Still, he found he resented it. It would be nice to think something had come of all the grief Streaker and her crew had fallen into. After all the surprises we've encountered, this voyage must have served up more than just a few new bits for you to crunch, he suggested.
The propensity of Earthlings to get into trouble and to learn thereby was the reason my owners agreed to this mad venture in the first place, although no one ever expected such a chain of unusual calamities as have befallen this ship.
Your talents were underrated. There was no way to answer that. Tom's arms had begun to hurt. Well, I'd better get back. In an emergency, I'll contact you via ship's comm.
Of course.
Orly let go and landed in a crouch by the closed doorway, a rectangle high on one steeply sloping wall.
Dr. Baskin has just passed on word to me that Takata Jim has ordered the survey party to return to the ship. The Nis spoke abruptly. She thought you would want to know.
Orly cursed. Metz might have had a hand in that. How were they to repair the ship if the crew weren't allowed to go looking for the raw materials they needed? Kredeki's strongest reason for coming to Kithroop had been the abundance of pre-refined metals in an oceanic environment accessible to dolphins. If Hikahi's prospectors were called back, the danger had to be severe, or someone was panicking.
Tom turned to go, but paused and looked up.
Nis, we must know what it is the Galactics think we've found.
The sparkles were muted. I have done a thorough search of the open files in this ship's onboard microbranch library for any record that might shed light on the mystery of the derelict fleet, Thomas Orly. Aside from a few vague similarities between the patterns we saw on those gigantic hulls and some ancient cult symbols, I can find no support for a hypothesis that the ships we found are in any way connected to the fabled progenitors.
But you found nothing to contradict it either.
Correct. The derelicts might or might not be linked with the one legend which binds all oxygen-breathing races in the five galaxies.
It could be we found huge bits of flotsam of almost no historical significance then.
True. At the other extreme, you may have made the biggest archaeological and religious find of the age. The mere possibility helps to explain the battle that is shaping up in this solar system. The refusal of the ship's mini-library to give more details is indicative of how many of the galactic cultures feel about events so long ago. So long as this ship is the sole repository of information about the derelict fleet, the survey vessel Streaker remains a great prize, valued by every brand of fanatic.
Orly had hoped the Nis would find evidence to make their discovery innocuous. Such proof might have been used to get the Eaties to leave them alone, but if the derelict fleet was really as important as it seemed, Streaker would have to find a way to get the information to Earth and let wiser heads figure out what to do with it.
You just keep contemplating, then, he told the Nis. Meanwhile, I'll do my best to see that the Galactics stay off our backs. Now, can you tell me...
Of course I can, the Nis interrupted again. The corridor outside is clear. Don't you think I would let you know if anyone were outside?
Tom shook his head, certain the machine had been programmed to do this now and again. It would be typical of the Timbrimi. Earth's greatest allies were also practical jokers. When a dozen other calamitous priorities had been settled, he intended taking a monkey wrench to the machine and explaining the mess to his Timbrimi friends as an unfortunate accident.
As the door panel slipped aside, Tom grabbed the rim and swung out to drop onto the dim hallway ceiling below. The door hummed shut automatically. Red alert lights flashed at intervals down the gently curving corridor.
All right, he thought. Our hopes for a quick getaway are dashed, but I've already thought out some contingency plans. A few he had discussed with the captain. One or two he had kept to himself. I'll have to set a few into motion, he thought, knowing from experience that chance diverts all schemes. As likely as not, it will be something totally unexpected that turns up to offer us our last real hope.